Hello, everybody, and welcome to Creating the Future's July 11th meeting 2022. Our integrity team slash board talking about community engagement. It is wonderful to have all of your faces here. Very excited for today. If you are watching and want to participate, if you're watching via the blog or watching via YouTube, please tweet any comments that you have, any questions that you have to the hashtag Creating the Future. That's the only place we're going to look is on Twitter. So if you type it into the blog or you send us a text message, we're not paying attention. So keep an eye out and please just tweet to the hashtag Creating the Future. And we're watching people just file in here and welcome to everyone. We will start as we always do, with welcoming ourselves, bringing ourselves into the room to take that deep breath and sort of cut off where we were and be present in the room with each other and share what has been awesome, what has been meaningful in your lives these days. Please also include where you are located. Hearing an echo, so I'm going to mute folks. I think that was it. Yeah. Please also include an acknowledgement of the people whose lands you are sitting on. And those of you who've been in these meetings before know that because one of the core tenets of catalytic thinking is that it's always about the people and never about the thing, we tend to call it a land acknowledgement when actually what we're acknowledging is the people from whom those lands were taken. So if you will just acknowledge those people, wherever you are, tell us where you're located. Tell us something that's meaningful in your lives. And brownie points if you've learned something cool about the people whose lands you are sitting on. So who would like to dive in and start and share what's been going on in your life that's either awesome or meaningful or what's going on?
I can go first. I have something prepared today. So hi, everybody. My name is Madeline DeMarco. I use the pronoun she and her, and I am joining you all from the lands of the Wyandotte and Anishinaabeg people, colonially known as Adrian, Michigan today. And something meaningful going on in my life is that my partner is going to be gone all week on a business trip to Seattle. So I'll have the house to myself, which is a little bit lonely, but a little bit nice to have a little bit of me time and do some of those independent things I've been putting on the back burner for a while.
Oh, always fun. Always fun. When it's not permanent, it's always fun. Wonderful. Welcome, Madeline. Who else? What's going on in your worlds?
Hi, everyone. I'm Carl. I'm just outside London, a place called St. Albans in the UK. I'm afraid I am not on anyone's lands, though. If you're interested, Julius Caesar marched his army through my village just over 2,000 years ago through a little place near us called, I think it's Devil's Dyke. What's awesome going on for me? Well, first of all, the weather is roasting, or it's roasting in UK terms. Anyway, so I am currently really struggling with the heat, but you probably just think, oh, that's nothing. My awesome. Well, I wrote a report the other day that someone said was the worst thing that they'd ever read in their lives. It was about grant making, and they said, clearly, you don't know anything about this subject or the voluntary sector. And I just sort of concluded, well, you can't please all of the people all of the time. So there you go.
Yeah, this is obviously your first day in the sector and you don't know anything about it. Oh my gosh. Carl, for those who don't know who are in the room, could you share where you've spent the past 20 years?
I've spent the last 20 years in what you would call the nonprofit sector, which includes working with probably the leadership teams of quite a few of the largest trusts and foundations, and actually some of the smallest ones as well. And I helped establish a foundation here in the UK as well. So, oh well.
Maybe another 20 years and you'll know something. Who else? What's going on in your world?
You can go. No, hi, everyone. Apologies. I'm going to just stay off camera and give myself a little bit of breathing space today. I'm sorry. My name is Farah Mahesri, she, her pronouns, and I am coming today from Ohlone land, otherwise known as Oakland, California. And last week, I took a day and took nephews and nieces to an amusement park and went on a roller coaster, or many roller coasters, for the first time in several years. And it was just such a great reminder to me that sometimes all you need to do is like hang out with little kids and scare yourself into giggling fits. It did also make me, we had this moment where we were like stuck on a roller coaster. We were not upside down, so it was fine. But my cousin and I were having a philosophical conversation as we were strapped in the heat, being like, well, humans are a little bit weird in that we now have to create these like metal contraptions to scare ourselves, or like, yeah, we're like dropping from heights and things to have these really big emotions. And maybe that is just a learning moment for us to, again, find any reason to laugh on a daily basis, because it really does make the world better.
I love it. Yep. Thank you. I'm so glad you're here, Farah. We have missed you.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And Carl, I'm sorry that, you know, we weren't actually able to meet up when I was on your side of the pond.
We managed to find the one day in 20 years when like the entire transport system was on strike, didn't we?
Yeah. Always something exciting.
Next. Always.
Thanks.
Wonderful. Who else? What's going on in your world? Yeah, Ron.
I'm speaking from Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the lands of the Mi'kmaq. And probably the awesome for me is just a great family visit from my sister on the West Coast from BC and her family, who were here primarily for a wedding of her on her husband's side. But we ended up having a great week and accommodating everybody in their various things they wanted to get done within a week. So it was great.
Oh, always delightful. Always delightful. Thanks. Who else? What's going on in your world? All right, I'll start calling. Kim, you were going to be who I was going to call. So you're good.
Excellent. So I'm Kim Chung, pronouns are she, her, and I'm from Edmonton, Alberta, and they're the traditional lands of the Cree, Nakota Sioux, Blackfoot, Dene, and Salto, and the homeland of the Métis. I took last week off to go on a solo camping trip, so I packed my tent up. I went to the mountains in Jasper and found a camping spot and stayed there for 4 days. I left rain in a flooded yard and ended up in Jasper, where it actually stopped raining for 3 days while I was there, which was lovely. And I've been on kind of a roller coaster because that was really grounding for me. I just sat with the water and the sounds and everything, and really got to think a lot. And then, unfortunately, when I came home to news of our staff have actually, we had a number of staff that had losses in their family deaths. There was three that happened over the weekend, all unexpectedly. So I came home to that, but then, and I, one of my friends was one of them, but I came home to that. But then as I'm going through my hundreds of emails today, my first day back in the office, I got really great news that funding that we had had to reapply for, that we've been getting for the last 12 years, we had to reapply. We got approved for actually more than we had been getting before, which was exciting and unexpected. So it's been this roller coaster of stuff today.
it's your trial by fire welcome back.
Yes.
Well, I've been very curious how your trip was, so I'm really glad. Wonderful. Jackie, how about you? What's going on in your world?
Yeah, hi everyone. My name is Jackie Bradley. I am in the same location as Madeline, which, as she mentioned, was the lands of the Anishinaabeg and Wyandot Nations. And my awesome is actually somewhat similar to Kim's, is that I missed our last meeting, actually, because I was also camping. I was camping in the actual current lands of the Lacouturay Lake Superior Band of Chippewa Indians in northern Wisconsin. And so was able to start each day with the loons out on the lake in a kayak and end each day around a campfire. And it was lovely.
Oh, it sounds perfect. It sounds just perfect. Yay. Vu, how about you? It's good to see you.
Good morning, everyone. This is Vu. I use he, him pronouns. I am calling in from Seattle, which is on Duwamish and Coast Salish land. Apologies for my personal appearance. It's been a rough morning ferrying small children off to their summer program. It was a lot of screaming and crying, and that was just from me. The children were even worse. So it's been a rough morning. So I'm glad to see you all. My awesome is that I did manage to teach them both how to ride their bicycle. Wow. Within 1 week, they both learned how to ride their bikes. And now we're going biking around Seattle parks. It's been really nice.
Oh, how delightful. How delightful. Well, part of my awesome is having you here. It's been a while and we have definitely missed you. I can't count the number of times Carl specifically has missed you. Linda, welcome.
You're muted, Linda.
Hi, I just unmuted. Sorry, I have dogs, so I always mute myself. they can be very loud. Hi, everybody. I have missed the last couple meetings. I'm so sorry. Just lots of things going on in my world. The last time I was with my grandchildren, I live in Baltimore, and I'm so glad you asked this because I didn't know about the Indians, the Piscataway people of Southern Maryland. So I had to look that up, and I'm embarrassed. Because I did, and it turns out that my husband's great-great-grandfather was the Indian consulate for the United States in New Mexico and smoked a peace pipe with, I have to get all the information, I don't have it available to me right now, but he's in the museum in New Mexico in Santa Fe. There's this whole exhibit of Dr. Steck in Santa Fe. So in some ways, through my husband, I'm related to advocating for them. So that's a good thing. I have a lot going on, involved in a lot of nonprofits. I'm consulting with one and also volunteering for about four, and I have to learn how to say no. Just asked to be on another committee, and I don't think I'm going to do it. My awesome is that one of the meetings I couldn't be at, I had my 40th wedding anniversary, and we're actually going to be 40. Can you believe that? It's wow. just unbelievable. And we're going to be renting a home in Woodstock, Virginia, in a winery for 3 weeks with a swimming pool. It's sort of my domestic Tuscany, I guess you might say. We're going to do a lot of hiking and, you know, biking. And I teach yoga, so I'm still going to teach my yoga via Zoom for my students from there. But I'm excited. That's not until July 20th, but we're already packing and organizing to do that. So I'm very excited about that. And just really lovely to be with you all. And I apologize again for missing.
Oh, it's great to have you here. Great to have you here, Linda. Lori, how about you?
Hi, good morning. Not morning for some of you. I use the pronouns she and hers, and I am here where Coast Salish people have lived and thrived. And within the Salish people, there is also a Swinomish and Lummi tribe. People identify as a tribe and are living in community together. My awesome is that I'm not at work today, and there is no COVID running around this little building. This is my little house, which it kind of comes and goes like a big wave, you know, like a big submerging kind of wave out here. And like most places, we're pretty understaffed. So that's, you know, and people are tired. My awesome though is, and it's a two-part thing. The first part does not sound awesome, but I swear it's awesome. On Friday night, I was with I live on a community land or with a community land trust. We're 18 families. Most of my pleasure here is pushing back blackberries and pulling out invasive things. And so Friday night we were having a work party, and I was climbing up on a truck and loading up a bunch of branches. And I just had this wondering, like, I wonder how long I'm going to be able to do this kind of thing, you know, climbing up and jumping on the branches and flattening them all out and having a great time with some younger neighbors. And I jumped down, which is not an unusual thing necessarily, and I broke my leg.
Oh no.
So that doesn't sound awesome, but so being a little place means help when it's there is not very far away. I had an x-ray and stabilized the leg, and for some reason I decided to dose with like a childbirth labor protocol of arnica, homeopathic arnica. Okay, I still don't know how it works, but I don't need crutches. I have no bruising. I have no swelling. I don't know. That's what homeopathics are. When you get the right one, magic. Anyway. I think that is awesome, and especially being here with everybody on time and at the beginning is also my awesome. So thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I hope it keeps healing. Wow, that's incredible.
It doesn't usually go the other way, if that's at least, incredible. You know. Wow. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, wow. Mark, how about you?
Oh, thank you. I go by the pronoun that guy, which I was dubbed by my mother-in-law a long, long time ago. What's that guy doing for work? I live on the lands of the Korchog, who are part of the Iroquois Nation. And I didn't know there were loons in Ohio, but they came to visit for the weekend. They're my wife's cousins. So we had a good time. And they're really in a world of really deep doggy doo-doo, and I was very grateful to be able to listen and help them if that's all it took, and I think it did. My wife and I spent the weekend with them here, and I'm just grateful that we are stable and healthy ourselves, so that was a big thing. The other awesome is that I'm starting to use, and I'm not really there yet, but that's why I'm here, is to start asking questions, the larger questions in larger groups. We've gotten, I think community engagement is really what we've been doing the most of in the last 3 months. And a lot of it has to do with a process of team building, like who should be at a meeting. And most of my meetings now are between 8 and 12 and 15 people, because we've got to round it out. It can't just be us and them, or, you know, the homeowners association and the local whatever. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked. So once we start working in teams of even 5 or 8, we're starting to see results that we wouldn't have seen before.
Wonderful. It's always inspiring when you're telling us stories. Thank you. Thank you. Josephine, how about you?
Hi, good morning, afternoon to everyone. I'm my pronouns are she and her, and I'm joining you from Sarasota County, Florida. And we're home to some of the oldest Native American tribes, including Calusa, I hate not saying it the right way, Tocobaga, and Timucan people. Happy to be here. Always looking forward to this. It inspires me and allows me to question in a good way the way we're reaching out to communities through the Patterson Foundation. So I enjoy being here. My awesome is so hilarious, though, that I'm going camping this week. And so I was like, yay, everyone, I have camping sisters now. I'm driving. So I don't know if any of you remember my friend Beatrice, who was on the call maybe several times. So she's leaving to go to Sweden for a master's program. So I'm driving to DC with a friend of mine, leaving tomorrow, camping along the way, because Beatrice has this amazing yellow chair that has become very special to us in our long distance friendship, you know, while she's there and I'm here. So she's always in the yellow chair. So I said, I want the yellow chair. And so I'm going to get the yellow chair to bring it back to my house so that when we talk and she's in Sweden, I'm like adopting the yellow chair until she can have it back. So it's this seriously, I know I'm laughing, but it's making me feel closer to her, even though she'll be farther away. So in between the going to DC, we're camping on the way there and camping on the way back. So I'm looking forward to it.
How wonderful. How wonderful. Please give her a hug from all of us.
I will, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Elaine, welcome.
Welcome. I did have my camera off because I was trying to jam some lunch in my my system before we got going here. So I am here from Dufferin County. Dufferin County sits about an hour north of the greater Toronto in Ontario, and resides on the ancestral lands of the Teonatate, the Attawandron, the Haudenosaunee, and Anishinaabe's people. I did learn this, I'm going to say maybe 2 months ago, and it's on a sticky. I have it on a sticky. And it's a reminder for me to do something about Scugog Island, First Nations, the Mississaugas, and Georgina Island, the Chippewa. These are two islands that sit just north of the Greater Toronto, where there is a lot of affluence. And they are two of 58 reserves that are on a long-term water advisory. That's over 10 years. That is utterly and shamefully ridiculous. And I need to do something, otherwise I'm not supporting things that I speak of. So I haven't figured out what I'm doing, but I will. Anyway, my awesome is meeting Wu, because I haven't met you before. I've met everybody else in the call, I think, here. So that's one awesome. My other awesome is this Saturday, we are going to a 25th wedding anniversary. So not quite 40 years, 25th wedding anniversary party. And it's in a barn, and they're redoing their vows, and it's going to be lovely.
Oh, how beautiful. Yeah. How beautiful. Wonderful. Thank you. Andrew, can you hear us? You know, Andrew was getting his car serviced today, and so we don't have him on video. We may have him on audio.
Well, if you can hear us, Andrew, you're on mute.
Okay. I think he mentioned in the chat he was going to be listening only while
gotcha.
He's waiting
okay.
for his car.
Well, wonderful. Wonderful. I totally understand that. We have all sat at the car dealer way longer than we want to. So totally get it. Totally get it. It is really, really wonderful to have all of you here and to experience what's going on in your lives. Dimitri, how about you? Let me hand over the mic to you.
together. I'm always wondering what awesome I'm going to share that may be your awesome. So I'm just going to go ahead with one of them and let you pick from whatever else remains. Dimitri Petropoulos, coming to you from Tucson, Arizona. It is warm here too, Carl, just to let you know. The traditional lands of the Tohono O'odham people, at the beginning of the conversation, Hilde said, if there's something interesting you've learned, I wanted to share something about the Tohono O'odham very quickly, is that it is a nation that is on both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border, and that has, since the Gadsden Purchase, has created all kinds of issues where, as part of their religious ceremonies and as part of just families that are together, they butt up against fences and walls and whatnot to basically have their lives continue as they have. So it's, I don't think there's any other tribes that have that kind of circumstance that they're dealing with. My awesome is that I mentioned it's warm here. We on Saturday did something that is kind of unusual for Tucson. We have some friends who have decided they want to have a vineyard, and they grow grapes, which they then harvest and turn into wine. And they have a little party once a year where they invite friends and family and whatnot to come out at 5:30 in the morning to pick the grapes before it gets hot, because by 7:30, 8:30, it's really hot outside. And so we did that on Saturday, which was actually just a blast. They had, after the grape picking, the harvesting, they have a amazing brunch that they put together, and we're all rewarded with this great food and camaraderie. And this year they included t-shirts with their label, which is the Surly Javelina brand of wine, or label of wine. Sometimes we even get a bottle to take home with us. So that's my awesome.
It is very, very awesome. And part of that awesome was that we know these folks because my daughter went to middle school with their daughter, and there is a gang of about 12 of them. I was going to say girls, they're close to 40, but 12 of these girls, these middle school girls, who still hang together. They're on text chains together. They're all over the country. They're all over the world. And I got to meet many of them. So that was pretty fun. I am Hilde Gottlieb. I am here also in Tucson, Arizona, the homelands of the Tohono O'odham, and one of the many homelands of the Pasquayaki. One of the interesting things that happens here in the summertime and is very traditional for the O'odham people is the harvest of the saguaro fruit. And that was a big part of their diet before we came along. For those of you who are not familiar with the saguaro, if you've seen cartoons, it's the cactus that, well, let's step back, that looks like this, that's got the big arms on it. So if all you've seen it in Roadrunner cartoons, that's us. They flower in the late spring, and then they get these beautiful bright red fruit, very sweet fruit on the tips. And they take long poles and poke them to harvest them. And someone stands below in a basket, because the saguaros can be 15 feet tall. But it is one of the traditional things that many folks around here like to learn from the indigenous folks, because we have this beautiful, beautiful harvest that otherwise you would just look at and go, oh, what's that stuff? The need, especially in the desert, to find anything that is edible, and the ability to have survived for thousands of years in this desert is pretty remarkable. My awesome is quick. I'm writing and it's going well. And over the weekend, I took the pile of notes that was over a foot tall that I've accumulated over the years, And it officially, as of yesterday at about 4 o'clock, is all folded into the outline. So the recycling bin is full and the pile is gone. And so that means that within the next week, I can actually start writing. Very, very excited. One of these days, there's a book on catalytic thinking coming your way. that's been pretty wonderful. And it's also been really wonderful reflecting on the conversations that we've been having. It has been really energizing to be thinking about community engagement through the lens of why do it, what's important about it, and what it makes possible, and what are the conditions that lead to really true engagement, which is where we're going to pick up today. A quick review of where we have been. We started out, we've been following catalytic thinking. I'll just start with that. We've been following catalytic thinking. The first question we asked is who would be affected by engaging around the question of what's next for creating the future? And we came up with a really long list of anybody that could be affected by that. The importance of that is that if we don't ask about the people who are going to be affected, then we are opening the door to unintended consequences. And you know, we call it unintended consequences. We say, how could we ever have known? Well, we could have known if we said, oh, these people will be impacted. Let's include them in the conversation. From there, we spent a lot of time in that first meeting just listening to each other about what's important about engagement. Why is this important? And then last time where we really focused was starting to reach for what that makes possible. What does engagement make possible? What does it look like when it's good? And if y'all took a look at, and Dimitri, if you could grab the summary, or I can do it when I stop talking, I'll grab the summary. For those of you who did not see the summary of the last meeting, Jackie did the incredible notes that she always does. And from that, I was able to pull what seemed to be core themes that we were talking about when we reached for what was possible. The three big themes that seemed to come out was that engagement makes possible feeling connected. It makes possible learning from each other, and it makes possible excitingly a shift in power, which is for me personally the most exciting. And that the bottom line is that the ultimate success of engaging is that people are engaged, that the community is engaged. And so that's where we're going to be playing today. One of the reasons we reach for that very, very highest potential outcome, that highest aspiration, is rooted in brain science. Our brains naturally get narrower and narrower no matter where we start the conversation. So if we start the conversation with, what are we going to do to engage? We will naturally go down that rabbit hole of getting the conversation narrower and more based on how and what we're going to do. And so that's why we lift it up as high as we can to what's the point? You know, basically, why? We dive right into the how otherwise. And so what we really lifted it up last time was to talk about why. Why is it important? What is the why behind our engaging? And from there, we can start working backwards to lay the dominoes out that we get to that engaged community. So I guess first I would ask, are there any reflections that any of you had as you thought about our conversation last time? Anything that you would add? I know we talked about a lot of things, but as you looked at that summary, and I will post the link to it, is there anything that you would add? Or anything that stood out to you that you'd like to share? And if we could raise your hands, we've got a large group here. I'm gonna find that link. There we go. Hmm. Okay, I just posted the link to the summary if you all haven't seen it. Lori.
So the summary was really helpful for me to articulate what I realized that I had been doing since the two juiciest conversations. I realized that I had been holding like that whole goal of feeling connected with people, that somehow I had held that on top, and I have been feeling not confident that my experience and even my beliefs and my values would actually, engaging with people would actually end up with us feeling connected. Okay, then I have lined up now 6 different walks around a lake, what I used to do with all of my prenatal clients, you know, and it's about a 4-mile walk. And so I just asked people to come and walk with me to talk about this clinic and this healthcare district. And I know that I got this from our talking, but I didn't realize that's what I was doing until I saw the summary, which is I just wanted to see what I could learn from people. As you can imagine, you know, people, blah, 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 you know, they love to talk, and I learned so much. And I was really, like, I felt so much fondness for them and appreciation. And so, you know, to be continued, but yeah, both the process and then the summary, they just feel like such big ahas and shortcuts. So, appreciate it.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Anything that is standing out for you before we start diving into the conditions that will lead to that? Yes, Elaine.
But what's standing out for me is I'm getting really good at catching myself saying how I'm going, what conditions need to be in place? What would it take to? So that's what's standing out for me is I'm catching myself and changing the language.
Awesome. Awesome. You can be my awesome for today now. I just changed my awesome. Well, good. So where we're going to dive in now is looking at those outcomes, those high level outcomes. Of people feeling connected, people feeling engaged, people learning together, and the big one of shifting power. And start just asking, what needs to be in place for people to feel engaged, for people to feel connected? Let's just take one of them right now. Let's take the big hairy one, the shifting power. What needs to be in place so that people have that sense of agency, self-efficacy, feeling that they can effect change, that people are building something together that makes a difference, that beautiful sense of mutual accountability of us together, getting beyond the savior complex that we talked about last time, the quote last time of giving the mic to the people who are most effective. What needs to be in place for that? What do people need to know? What do people need to have? What do they need to feel? What do they need to believe?
Could I start, Hildy?
Go, Carl. Yeah. And again, as you all are. Press the button to raise your hands, and then I can put you in order as we go. Go ahead, Carl. Sorry.
I read something a couple of weeks ago that talked about how activists, and especially young people who are active in this country, were feeling more and more despairing, actually, about their activism. And a sense that, like, they were, that they are sort of campaigning about the climate in particular was the sort of the issue. But they were despairing at the sense that nothing is changing. And almost that what had happened is that you see various corporations and so on talking about their net zero goals and so on. But that's all it is. It's just talk. They're sort of just saying what they're going to do, but nothing is actually changing. Now some of that, obviously, I mean, it's about, you know, I mean, the extent to which we can measure change and how, you know, I mean, these really, the things that we're most interested in, which are there's sort of really deep structural change in society, which don't take a few years, they take generations. I mean, some of that, I think, is about managing people's expectations about how change happens. So there's something there about, this sounds patronizing, but almost a teaching role of trying to help people think about how change happens. And also, you mean the fact that it's not linear, it zigzags and so on. But also what they need is power, because, you know, one of the things that is sort of coming out of this is that one of the reasons that some things are not changing quickly enough is because it's still the case that the people in power don't share their position about the climate and what we're going to do about it.
Yeah. So the question again being, what does it take for people to actually feel stepping into their power and to step in? Great, Carl, thank you. Elaine.
So kind of two things. Honesty, and I think honesty comes from being heart-centered. I read this amazingly beautiful book called The Tao of Equus, and one of the quotes that was in there, I wrote a whole bunch of things out of there because it's all about horses, but horses teach us a lot of things, and I'm a horse woman, so we have horses. I run horse programs, kids programs, stuff like that. So, and one of the quotes was, the salvation of the world depends upon the resurrection of a heart-centered, systemic, co-creative partnership between human beings, nature, and the source of them both. And I believe this, and I believe that being honest so that you can be open and accepting and feel secure, that that's the environment that you're being able to, you know, come to, and being heart-centered is very key to having a conversation and listening to each other. I had the privilege a long time ago of being part of a meeting where about 200 people at this conference were seated in a circle, and it was led by an indigenous group who asked us to listen to each other as we went around the circle, and everybody added a sound. And I can tell you, it gives me shivers right now, even thinking about that, because everybody was there being open and listening and making a contribution. And by the time the whole circle was humming, it was powerful. So.
Wow, thank you. Could you, it doesn't have to be right now, but could you share that quote with us? That was beautiful.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I will. You can type it up and share it with us. That would be awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Farah.
Thank you. I've been thinking a lot about and doing a lot of like workshops and things, including Tema Kuhn's work on both the characteristics of white supremacy culture, but also the principles for racial equity and like how do we kind of build it together. And one of the things that they talk about that really resonates with me is that as we do work, and particularly as we shift power, we have to be accountable to both principles and to people at the same time. And to me, that really, especially as we talk about like engagement and building community, resonates. And I felt myself as I was thinking and talking about this a lot over the past couple of months about how much I myself fall into these false binaries, right? And come into this place where I'm like, I'm going to be, it's all about like the principles or the values. And I'm going to, you know, the ends justify the means kind of thinking. And we, you know, we have to be rigid. We have to be true to our values. Or that other level of binary of like, oh, it's all about the people. And we have, we should just be empathetic. And like, we should just, you know, everyone's on their own journey and kind of let the conversation play out as it will. And this really powerful call to actually bring those two things together and say that it's not either or, we have to be able to do both at the same time. So you can't sacrifice your principles, but you also can't sacrifice people. You can't cut out your principles or your values, but you also can't cut out your people. And holding that, and that I always love anything that asks us to reject false binaries. And then the other one that I've really been thinking about again, and especially when it comes to like community building, where I'm working on something to try to launch a fairly large campaign up around imperialism. And one of the things we keep talking about is that change has to happen at multiple levels. And in that sense, we have to give people opportunities to engage at multiple levels and also push them to engage at multiple levels. So like in systems level thinking to say that, you know, we are engaging as individuals and part of the work is ourselves and learning and relearning ourselves. And part of it is, you know, whichever kind of work you're doing, but like your team, your organization, society, but it's asking all of us to engage at multiple levels at the same time. So it's not just about asking somebody else to change, or for the external community to adopt certain values. Simultaneously has to be about what are the values we're willing to shift internally ourselves. And also again, at the same time, like rejecting false binaries, you can't just do the work on yourself and be like, I've got a great coach, I've got a great therapist, I'm well done. You do have to kind of step up and talk about how you're gonna use your power and agency to make shifts at other levels. And so I think it's that, those two things that have really been helping me think deeply about shifts in power is that it's about principles and people simultaneously at the same time, and also about shifting power at multiple levels at the same time.
Wow. There's just so much in what you just shared. And it is the both and, the not the either or, the you know, just as it's principles and people, we are simultaneously individuals in context, and all those contexts. Thank you so much for that. Was beautiful. Elaine, do you still have something, or did you just not take your hand down? I'm good. Kim?
So I think I've mentioned before how we've, in the past year or two specifically, we've looked at how can we not give power back necessarily, but share power in our programming with people that are facing a lot of barriers in their lives. How do we help them? How do we know how to help them? First of all, what do they want out of our programming? What are their goals? What are their strengths that they're bringing? How can we help build on those? And we've tried to make our programming really adaptive to our learners. And I think we've been really successful in many ways. But when we first started this idea of, let's ask what our learners want to, how they want to learn and what they want to learn. So we've always asked what they want to learn. We've always asked what their goals are. But we've always had this structure of programming that we've worked in. And so we're trying to make the structure much more flexible to meet the actual needs and real life desires of what our learners want. And when we first started, it was such a foreign thing to them. They didn't know how to answer us. They didn't know. They didn't expect to be asked. They didn't know what to say. They didn't know that they could say. And so what we've learned over these years is it's about practice and providing a really safe place for people to practice taking that power and practice saying, this is what I actually need. And this is how I learn best. And this is what I want for my family. because it's a really, it's something they don't get asked a lot. And we didn't actually realize how much that was the case until we started working in this way. And as they've practiced over the last couple of years, what we've seen is this incredible change. So for those of you who don't know, we work with low literacy learners, and with COVID and everything, they were getting all this information, but they couldn't necessarily discern what was truth, what was fiction, what they should be doing. They didn't know to ask even. And what, how we know we've been successful in the way we're working is that they've started to bring questions to us, or they've started to pick pieces out of the news or Facebook or whatever they're seeing. And instead of just believing it or going with it, they've come and said, hey, this is what I saw. This is, I don't think it's right, but can you help me kind of figure out more about it? So they've started asking these questions themselves and really thinking about the information and analyzing it. And that's part of the literacy learning, of course, too, is once you're able to comprehend, you can start asking those questions. And the other thing that I've noticed is they feel they have the right to ask the questions now, where they didn't necessarily before. They don't know that they can question. They don't know to question. And so for a lot of people to be able to engage, to affect change for themselves, like they need to understand that they can actually do these things, because they may be being told that, or their own experiences, or we're the teachers, we know best. Those kind of setups are very common, right? So I'm rambling a little bit, but for us, it's been about practicing, them practicing taking power and actually being able to question and make decisions on their own. And we've been talking a lot about this, about how do we get power back to families? How do we get back to the caretakers being able to feel like they have the power to affect change in their own lives and their communities? And so this is a conversation we've been having a lot.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim, because it's a perfect, it really leads to the question of, okay, so what does it take? So let's play with that. What does it take for people who have been told for so long, you don't have power, who have been patronized for so long, who don't feel they have the right to ask questions, the right to, the platform to do so. They don't even know who to ask. What does it take for people to feel they have that power, to feel, well, of course I can ask that question. Of course. What do people need to know? What do they need to experience? What do they need to believe? What do they need to have? What needs to be in place for folks to feel that they have the agency, the ability to step into their own power? Power that we have been real, real good at telling them they don't have. Linda.
Hi. So I have done a lot of work on civic engagement and service learning, and what we found, and bringing diverse groups of individuals from class, race, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds, together. And what has been so powerful to break down barriers between race and class is that experiential learning, like beginning with some kind of hands-on project that you do together. You are needed to put the wall up, one's holding it. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter if you have a, you know, PhD in psychology, or you have a high school degree, you know, you need each other to do this. And it's been amazing what outcomes we've had from that. And it really does empower, and it causes folks to listen. You know, it really provides that opportunity in a safe way. You know, and you're coming together and you're holding each other up.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Thank you. Kim. Yeah.
Sorry, you asked that other question and I just had a little bit of a follow-up. Okay. So the main way we've seen people feel like they can actually step into that role of power is that they've seen us, they've seen us listening because we've implemented things immediately. And so, like, if we hadn't done that, there's no way they would have trusted the process. So it was about making sure that whatever they said, they saw that we listened and made changes and followed where they wanted to go.
Great. Josephine.
It really was just what Kim was saying is the piece for me to make sure it's included is we could do a lot of these things, reaching out to the community, but without that trust and realization that the one party is willing to listen to the other party fully and take it in versus coming to the table with the answer already and just, you know, acting out the piece that we have to invite you to talk. But the understanding.
Oh, no. Oh, getting to the good stuff. We will come back to Josephine when she's back.
And
we missed you. You broke up there for a little bit. You were talking about trust and coming in without having the answer already. But you're freezing up on some of it. So feel free to dive back in. Other thoughts in terms of for people to feel they have that power. Because such a big part of it is we have systemically told folks you don't have power. Just sit down and shut up. We're in charge. We're the experts. And, you know, the nonprofit sector has been the worst at it. We're real good at being the experts in the room. And we have spent a lot of time separating ourselves from community and seeing community engagement as a thing we do to further our stuff we want to do. And what does it take to dismantle that in people's minds so that they feel they actually have the power that we're talking about sharing? Elaine.
Well, part of this makes me think of how we actually relate to each other. And a long time ago, I was exposed to transactional analysis. And you have the parent, child, adult positions. And anytime you approach somebody as the parent, you get the child response. If you approach somebody as the child, you will get the parent response. But if you approach people adult to adult, that's where you can meet. So I think a lot of times, and we know this, our systems were built in a paternalistic way. Be prescriptive, and you know, I think the more we can be adult to adult, and that's oversimplifying, but you know, even in the language and how you approach an other, it's that we're equal, not somebody has the parent position or somebody's coming as the child looking for, like, I think that makes a difference,
huge difference. Thanks. Madeline.
I think part of that, Elaine, is stepping away from some of that power ourselves. You know, for example, being in community meetings where you're supposed to be there as equals, but half the room introduces themselves as executive directors, right? And the other half's like, I'm just the community, I guess. And so stepping away from some of that and truly valuing that expertise in others.
Wow. Yeah. Position is huge. You know, we've talked in the cohort for those of you who've not been part of meetings. Many of the people in the room today are part of a cohort that is learning catalytic thinking and community engagement alongside of us here. And part of what we've talked about is when we introduce ourselves in a group, when we introduce ourselves by position, we immediately intimidate people. And so if I know the mayor is in the room, well, that's the mayor. I'm just, you guys have heard me complain about just a, but I'm just a citizen. I'm just a neighbor. I'm just a person, but that's the mayor. Yeah. I think that's huge, Madeline. Thank you. What else needs to be in place for people to feel they have the authority to, if we're talking about mutual accountability, to feel that mutual part in the accountability? Yeah, Kim just entered in the chat, even in the way you set up the room can have an impact on how people feel in terms of their power and that dynamic. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, Jackie.
I think a lot of these are feeling to me very much about giving power. And so when I try and think about what it takes for people to be willing to take power, I think the thing that stands out to me is kind of an understanding that trying and failing is better than not trying at all.
Wow. And what does it take for that to happen?
That's a good question.
Not asking just you. Yeah, what does it take for people to feel willing to put themselves out there and try something they've never tried before? Mark.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. It's allowing people to fail without blame. It's having people try things that they haven't tried before, being able to catch them and not make them, let them make fatal mistakes. I mean, you know, either business-wise, social-wise, whatever, to be there to guide rather than to teach or tell. And having people realize that, yeah, it's not so bad. If I make a mistake, it's okay because we got seven other people who are covering and not covering up, but covering the error and fixing things, if you will, but riding the boat, if you, it probably a better analogy to keep it from going over the side.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Holding each other.
Hi, everyone. My apologies. I know I missed the last several months of conversations, and I tend to throw wrenches into things when I speak. And in some ways, that's the kind of role that I play. But I also appreciate that people indulge me in these not always fully formed conversations and thoughts in my mind. But as someone who has done a lot of community engagement work and who has been the subject of a lot of community engagement work, I kind of feel like we're kind of diving down a path of like, let's talk about these tactics about community engagement, which are good. These are good tactics. But I feel like a lot of community members are exhausted with being engaged right now. And it feels like we are in a very academic sort of conversation. And we're not really talking about what actually would be engaging to people. I always joke that in Seattle, if you're walking down a dark alley at night and you feel like someone is following you, it's probably someone trying to do some community engagement. And it's exhausting. We're tired of being engaged. And I just remember so many conversations of people trying to engage my community, which at the time was the Vietnamese community, and just dragging us to one summit after another, talk about equity and economic justice or whatever. And I remember myself doing this sort of stuff to people where I brought in a whole bunch of leaders of color into a room along with some funders. And we said, you know, we're trying to have this community engagement conversation about what to do. And this was during the Trump, the second week that he was elected. And he was sending out all sorts of executive orders, banning people, the Muslim ban, et cetera. And a lot of us were like, we need to actually have a conversation. And some of the funders were like, yes, let's engage the community in these conversations. And we had a 4-hour conversation. And the community is like, what we need right now is money, multi-year general operating money, and for you to get the hell out of the way so we can do our work. And the funders are like, oh, yeah, okay, well, we'll think about this. And the community is like, you need to do this immediately because we don't have time for like months and months. They're like, yeah, okay, well, we really appreciate all this feedback. This was really great. And yeah, let's accept failure and both and all of this stuff. And then it was not until 6 months later that a funder actually released a rapid response fund. Ironically, it was called a rapid response fund. And it was $25,000 that you had to apply and go through the same sort of malarkey to get this amount of money. And I feel like there is a disconnect that we are in danger of falling into when we start talking about community engagement without actually understanding what it is that the community's members, do they want to be engaged right now? And what kind, and is it exhausting to them? Right now, we're talking about this. We can't let this be an academic exercise. Like, what is actually concerning communities right now? The overturning of Roe versus Wade, the invalidation of Native sovereignty, the fact that trans people are getting killed every day, the fact that Black people are still getting killed by the police. Like, if we're going to engage, then we have to actually talk about what communities care about. Right now, the conditions that need to be met is survival for a lot of communities. Like, they're not going to go into a room because they want to feel a sense of belonging. There is no sense of belonging right now. It's being destroyed because people are getting murdered every single day. And we can talk for more, just the tactics of what how do we engage people? Let's have more hummus and food, you know, like, let's have transportation and childcare. Yes, those are all great tactics to have. But I feel like we need to start thinking about, like, creating a future's sort of existential role in this moment, which is, what is it that we are trying to do? What is the role that we need to play? And is it community engagement? Or is it actually go out and have conversations, like, and bolster people, you know, like have a conversation with, like, with abortion activists and be like, this is what we can do. This is what you can envision, you know, or whatever it is that we need. I think Carl was mentioning, like, a lot of activists are feeling very discouraged. Maybe that's something that Creating the Future could actually go in and say, this is what we actually, we need to, maybe one of our roles is to bolster the morale of the sector, of the activists in our sector. Maybe another role is to get them to think big, because that's one of Creating the Future's things that I have learned as an activist myself, right? So I'm not so sure if we should be engaging anyone in the way that traditional community engagement has been done, because it is exhausting. And I don't think people have any energy for it.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And so much of what we're talking about here is about who gets to decide what Creating the Future does next. And you know, is it just 5 of us? Is it just 2 of us? Is it 20 of us? Who gets to decide? And how do we figure that out? And who do we talk to? And how do we talk to them? And the talking about the things that communities care about, that creates the link. Thank you. Thank you. A lot to chew on. Yeah, Elaine.
I really appreciate you rocking the boat, throwing the anchor in, or throwing a, you know, however you phrase that. I think that's great. And it comes back to, you know, the beginning conversations, Hilde, about when you say, what is it that we are passionate about that others are also passionate about? And what do we want to do with that passion? So, yeah, there's all kinds of activist groups, and they come together because they have a passion that's very specific to something. And what is the passion beyond engaging? But it is for engaged community members. And I mean, it's big in terms of what does that feel like, and how do you, you know, what would it take to put that, to make people feel that they were able to engage for what they're passionate about.
A lot of what we talked about last time was all around people feeling like when they step in, it's making a difference. And I am so right alongside what you were saying, Carl, in terms of people being discouraged. And through all of the activists that you mentioned, I'm watching my own daughter, who is trying to figure out in a world that she sees is, you know, the world that millennials and everybody else, the younger people than that, are inheriting, that my generation has left them, and the immense amount of discouragement, the immense amount of Yeah, I'm just one person and nothing seems to be working and nobody seems to be listening. So I think I'll just go, you know, binge watch The West Wing for the 900th time. That's huge. And in that setting, in that scenario, what us as creating the future, wanting to go out to folks and say, help us build what's next. We don't know what's next for creating the future. Help us build what's next. What do you need? What do you want of us? What does it even take to get somebody's attention to feel that they have that voice? Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's quite easy to come up with examples of where you feel drained after having worked hard at some goal. And I think we've all been through it. It seems to me that if you look, when I look at our little community here and the few examples that I can see that have gone well, I reflect on what was the difference. You know, these are smaller projects, like when we were designing a library, for example, and they brought in new players that so there was an air of maybe of suspense, or we didn't know who they were, will they listen to us, but at least they were different and they weren't the same people. They weren't the politicians, which a lot of people have a harder time with. It wasn't the ruling class, which also people have a hard time with. And they brought a system in place, a process which they told people about ahead of time, and they kind of bought into it. And it was really one of the most lovely series of events, which took place over a year or so, and had many of the indicators of success. I think everyone was involved, but they also brought in experts and tempered discussions with a lot of facts and background. What had other events in other libraries that were being designed, failures and the positive aspects of those processes. And so it seems to me that people, they have to, you know, part of that trust is looking at it, being exposed to the process up front, having it available to you, being transparent, knowing what's going to happen. And then as it unfolds, what I saw happen in that particular instance was 6 months in or 7 or 8 months in, people were seeing their feedback actually in a website, and they could see that they were sticking to what they said was going to happen. I think that gave a lot of credibility to the people who were running it, and a lot, and actually more people got involved. And I think what really drained you is if you give your involvement for a great period of time, and then you see spin, or you see it disappear, or you see another agenda appear. All those things are really disheartening. And I think a lot of people, you know, if they feel they don't have the control, like in climate change, for example, it seems overwhelming and no one's in control. Every country's different, you know, and how they approach it. So it seems to me we have to get those processes up front and agendas and build trust slowly so that people can trust the players who are leading the process and seeing that different communities are valued by actually the proof of the pudding as it moves forward. They see, oh, it's actually, this is being taken into account. So I think somehow this process has to have an iterative sense where people again and again and again see that, oh yes, this is actually happening the way it's promoted as being as it was set forth. And I think really it's one of the key things for me. I see even in another organization, the Ecology Action Center, that, you know, they've been, people see a sort of a history of success. They see, yeah, they've gotten, anyone who wants to get involved, is it's available, but they also have experts to call upon if you're confused about an issue and you need scientific research to help you promote your arguments and make sure that they're on track. And they do see the agenda doesn't change. Their values are very steady over the last few decades, and they have actually influenced legislation and regulations here. And I think that's, it gives people a comfort. Just a few thoughts.
Great, wonderful. Thank you. Wow. Much to chew on. Much to chew on. Lori. And you're muted.
Both Kim and Vu said the thing that, so it feels like there's two different tracks. One, like Ron, it sounded like there was a long, like trust needs a long process of all the stuff you were saying. And at the same time, what I get from Vu and Kim, which fits so perfectly my situation here on our island in this medical clinic, is, Kim, you said they've seen us listen and then see us make changes immediately. And Vu, you were saying they asked, you know, people asked, what do you want? And we said, we need money. And then 6 months goes by and then there's an opportunity to apply. So that feels to me like there's some great guidance there. Like trust, there's some ways in which we need to, like, right now make something real for people. Like ask so that we have something to listen to, take action immediately on what we hear. Somehow in our process, we have long-term and short-term goals happening continuously, but especially those continuous long, those continuous short-term ask, listen, do.
Yeah. Wow. I'm writing lots of errors on my page. Yeah, wow. Thank you, Lori. Kim.
I was also thinking similarly, I think, Lori, about the layers that I'm kind of seeing. And one of the things Vu said about, like, the topic is Wade versus Roe for right now. And one of the things that clicked for me was when one of our families in one program were asked, what did they want to learn next? And they, it was during the time that all the graves of the children in residential schools were being discovered in Canada. And they wanted to know about that. They wanted to have discussions about residential schools and how do you talk about that with your kids? Because we're working with caregivers with their 0 to 6s a lot of time, and then sometimes just adults. But how do you talk about that topic and how do you, they knew that they should be angry, but they didn't know why. They didn't know enough about it. And so it was about finding the resources for them, for our staff as well, like giving them the ability and connecting them with different people, Indigenous leaders, elders, whoever it was that would help them feel comfortable also having the discussion. So for us, it was about education for our staff. It was about taking those really hard topics of conversation and finding ways to present it where it can just be openly discussed. And so I see that as kind of a, there's a, that first frontline level for us is we're actually trying to have those conversations. Our families are telling us they want to learn more about what's happening and finding the resources for it. And then the way our organization is structured is we have these frontline programming, but then we also have training. So we try to build capacity in other people to have do programming, specifically literacy programming, but we're trying to help them see how they can do it this way too, is how they can listen and how they can take that feedback and actually implement it right away. And then all of this is still that advocacy piece, trying to get the word out, like these are important issues and this is like why it should be paid attention to is, again, specifically to literacy for us, but trying to bring all those pieces together. So I see it, there's the layers. And so how do you have people working in those layers all the time with limited resources, with limited reach? But our team has been talking about ripple effects. So if we can affect one family, who are they going to touch and who is that going to go to? And how can we really amplify that effect? So yeah, that's where my thoughts led.
What you're sparking for me and Vu, you sparked it as well, is that community engagement may just be the wrong term. Because what you're really talking about, Kim, is you're co-creating at every point. You're co-designing and co-creating with the people, not for the people, not at the people. And that's really what we're looking to do. We are trying to figure out what is next for creating the future, acknowledging that it's not up to 5 or 8 of us who supposedly sit on the board slash integrity team that has already decided it's not around to make decisions. To figure out what's next, we need to co-create that. And I'm wondering if that umbrella term of community engagement is just a fancy way of saying focus group sometimes in people's minds. So that's occurring to me as you're talking, Kim, because really you weren't quote engaging people. You were just getting everybody together that was going to be affected by it and co-designing it and building it. So yeah, but thank you for that. Laurie, did you still have something or is your hand just still up? Okay. Madeline.
I think that's kind of along the lines of what I'm thinking, because when we're talking about community engagement here, we've been talking about it in the way of let's get other people involved in our work. And what if it was flipped around into what if we were involved in the other work happening? Because when I think of the community in which I live and work, there's not really a single issue that the community is not already doing something about. And in many cases, much more effectively than the organizations that claim to work on this. And so how, I guess, arrogant of me to assume that I am the table in which folks need to convene around, when really all I need to do is to engage myself with the community doing this work and listen until I hear a need that I can help to meet, whether that's funding, facilitation, support, time, volunteering, et cetera. And so I'm wondering if that, how do we engage in the community, is maybe better than trying to get the community to engage with us.
Deep breath on that one. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I am reminded with that term community engagement. A story that Vu, you told us, it's got to be 2 years ago, 3 years ago, of the kids drawing a fish. The short version is that kindergarten kids were split into two groups. And they were all told to draw a fish. And one group was told to draw just a fish. And the kids drew all kinds of fishes. And the other group was told, draw a fish. And here's what a fish might look like. And everybody in that group drew that fish. And I wonder if we're stuck in what traditionally, when we think of, that's why we've stopped calling the board, the board. It's our integrity team. Because when we think of a board, we have an image in our heads, and I'm really, really struggling with the term community engagement at this point as another fish. Farah.
Thanks. I had kind of a question, and it builds a little bit perfectly off of Madeline, what you just were talking about. And I guess my question is, do we see community as something other than ourselves? Right. And I hear a lot of, including myself, I think, been using language of like, we have to engage a community as if it is a thing that is different than. And so And the reason I ask that is I feel like they're, for me at least, in design principles, when I talk about like, what does it take to engage myself and the people around me, that often leads to a very different conversation than this notion of like, what do I need to engage or talk to or do a focus group with or something, a group that is not, does not include me, because that other piece leads to a lot of assumptions and a lot of like, and I think does lead us down to thinking more tactically. Whereas if the question is like, what would it take for myself to be more engaged? That's a, to me, it's a very different question. And I think my follow-up for us would be like, if we feel like engaging, we have communities to engage that are not us, then again, building off of what Madeline is saying, maybe it is, well, why aren't those communities here already?
Right.
Or why aren't we in those communities? But like, if we still feel the need to go off and talk to people, other people, like what, maybe it's spending a little bit of time thinking about that.
Yeah.
Just to just reflect on your question, Hildy, about, you know, like who gets to determine all of this? Is just a group of five or six people on this integrity body that determine all of these things about creating the future and so on. I do think that we are in this sort of chicken and egg thing, right? Because I think in some ways we have to determine some of that, or else people are, they're just, they don't have the time or energy to really go and co-create. I think in an ideal situation, yes, we would have all that time, but right now time is running out for a lot of communities. And I am not so sure we can actually pull people in. And then just reflect on what Farah was saying about like what, how do we engage ourselves, right? I mean, I've been engaged with Creating the Future for a couple of years now. And a lot of Creating the Future's work, Hildy's, your words in particular, were very influential to the community-centric fundraising movement, right? We have a link to your article on movement building on community-centric fundraising. It has really determined a lot of our decisions over the past several years. And I think, and just to be honest, you know, just being engaged in these types of conversations, I am not so sure that I can find relevance in them in many ways. And I was reading through the notes for the past couple of meetings, and I was just imagining what someone who is not like a white liberal, would they find relevance in these conversations? And I'm not so sure the answer would be yes. Right, there's no conversation, there's no touching on any of the current realities of communities right now. And I don't know how, like, I, as a person who benefits from Creating the Future, like, would I be engaged in these conversations? And I'm not so sure, because I want us to move out of this intellectualizing white moderate space that I feel like Creating the Future has been stuck in over the past several months. Right. I feel like there's like, we're at this sort of existential point where it's like Nazism is on the rise, and there's like two parties, you know, on the liberal side, the people who are like, let's go ahead and like have a conversation and see different people's point of views and let's get along. And the other side, that's like, we need to punch these Nazis in the face. And I think a lot of communities are moving towards, we need to punch Nazis in the face. And Creating the Future is still in like, let's all get along sort of space. And if we can stay there, but I think that will drop off many people, including me, because I want to punch Nazis in the face right now. That's where I'm at. And I feel like a lot of our community members are in that space too. And so if we don't make a stance of like, this is what Creating the Future is going to do, I'm not so sure we will engage the communities of color and other people from marginalized communities who may just not find it resonance, this very sort of, again, academic theoretical conversations.
Yeah, powerful. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Wow, you just make my brain go crazy. And maybe that's what we're looking for here, is not the literal punch in the face, but how do we, you know, put out the environment through creating the future that gives people the feeling that they can go and take that action, whatever it is, whether it's individually or whether they want to organize their neighborhood street or their neighborhood community or go after their local government. But what is it that creating the future? And I'm going to step back a minute and say that creating the future has equipped me to work in an environment where I hope that I'm having influence to make a difference. And so that's what I've received from Creating the Future since 2017. And it's newsletters that tell me things. It's give me different positions, different ways of looking, all right back to how to make a vision statement. It's not about your company. It's about the impact you want to see in the world. And that was a, you know, a head turner for a lot of people. So, you know, maybe that's, if the end goal is engaged citizens, then what is it that creating the future can do to equip populations, no matter who they are, to be engaged citizens so that they can make a difference, so they can feel like they make a difference, so they can feel like it's not just, you know, this room of people who's deciding a whole bunch of stuff. I love what you said, Boo.
I absolutely love this intellectual conversation. I mean, I was drawn to this, Hilde, because I don't feel like I'm getting enough, but I'm also, my brain is going crazy. And I already texted or chatted with Vu. You know, how can we be demonstrate this to, I mean, we're looking at, you know, the United States and different countries and blah, 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 blah. And I always look at that proactive, okay, how can we get what we're saying across? How can we get communities to feel this? And if they need our help, ask for it. And I'm crazy. I mean, you know, you wouldn't do what I do if I wasn't. But anyway, are you familiar with that Nextdoor app?
Hmm? Yes. And that's, are you familiar not a good with thing. That? It's not a good thing.
Well, but the next, it depends on how you use it.
I'm just an online skeptic, and I don't know if anybody knows it, but they ask too much personal information, which personal information can then be used elsewhere for other purposes. So okay. That it's a corporate incorporated neighbor thing.
It is
not my thing. But go ahead, Linda. I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
That's okay. It's just, you can reach a lot of folks that way. Just even to plant the seed about, you know, this is, we're here and we have, you know, this wisdom, and we want to be able to organize and help you to organize around different things. I don't know. It just came to me that it's a way to reach a lot of people without any real funding, because there's all kinds of groups going on, and there could be a Creating the Future group, and it could be, don't mind me.
Sure. And we will definitely get to tactics. We will definitely get to tactics.
I understand. I always move to tactics too early.
Our brains naturally go to tactics.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things I'm reflecting on Vu is the fact that we're all sitting, some of us have stopped watching the news. I can't watch it anymore because I want to punch everybody. I don't want to just punch Nazis. I want to punch everybody. And I think we're feeling less and less powerful, more and more powerless, daily, and at each bit of news, I've got nothing left. And I thought I had nothing left, and then you took something else away from me. And now I've got less than nothing left, and energy is collapsing. Movements are struggling with the immense disparity in power. Forget disparity in income and wealth, disparity in power by people who really don't care. And I'm looking at the fact that when we have so many people who are so discouraged, if the only alternative is to punch each other, which is what we're all feeling, which is absolutely what we're all feeling. What creates an environment that helps people take action that isn't punching each other? Because in this country, it's dangerous because we don't punch each other, we shoot each other. We feel so completely helpless on whichever side of whichever politics you're standing, that we hurt a lot of people. And helplessness is a really, really dangerous place to be coming from. So there's a piece in here for me that is, what is, and it gets to your question, Boo, is what is our role in helping people take action that actually accomplishes something? Carl, and then Lori. And then we're gonna wrap up with reflection.
There's so much I wanna say, but I almost sort of feel, I see where Vu's coming from. I don't fully agree with him, which I feel slightly nervous about. But I almost sort of feel like it's a yes and, rather than a this is the right way, rather than sort of the other. And the reason I say yes and is that, almost sort of going back to those activists that I talked about at the very beginning, one of the things that makes me angry sometimes is that the things that we've told people that they can do that will make a difference, some of those things are just bullshit. So, for example, clicking like on someone's Facebook post is taking action. No, it's not. That's not going to feed anybody. So some of the things that we've told people about what individuals can do, rather than structures and governments and so on about how we change the world, some of those things are just wrong. And we've got to make sure that, as you've just said, Hilary, that people have sort of got the right tools and stuff. Then the second brief observation I just wanted to make is that you need both. Mm-hmm. If you look at the suffragette movement in my country at the turn of the 20th century, you had people, women lying in front of racehorses and being killed. They were chaining themselves to railings and so on. But alongside that, you had people in the background who I think were adopting more of what you might call an insider strategy. Right now, certainly in the UK, we've got people gluing themselves to highways and stopping the traffic and causing massive arguments in the UK because people can't get to work and so on. And we need those people who are doing those sorts of actions. But we also need people who are in the background, who are coming up with policy solutions and who are trying to collect data to measure our progress to net zero and so on. So coming to Vu's point, is am I or are we a group of people that are going to tell people how to go and take direct action? I'm not sure we are. Vu knows those people far better than I do, and they're doing a pretty good job from what I can see. But for the people who are somewhere else on that spectrum, they've got to be more effective, because so much of what we tell them about how to take action is not actually having an impact. So I think that's where we've got to think about our contribution in helping those people take more effective action.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl. Very clarifying. Lori, and then we're going to wrap up and do some reflection. So everybody think about what is standing out to you in our conversation today. Lori.
Yeah, Carl, you said a lot of what I was thinking. And so I'll just distill it to this. I just had this image of a storefront, and on the glass it says creating the future, and then there's a door. And I am a person who is so ready, wanting, full of energy and knowing and understanding that it makes sense for me to want to punch somebody in the face. And then I walk in the door, and creating the future is like, yeah, okay, here's what we do with that. I mean, that's where I am.
Thank you.
Much more immediate, but also very informed by a very big picture that you have helped me understand already.
Yeah. Thank you.
But the storefront and the immediacy.
Yeah. I'm grateful for all of this conversation. These are the conversations we need to be having. So if everybody will take a deep breath, this has been a big one. If you took any notes, circle what has stood out to you and let's do some reflection. I was remiss in not welcoming Sherry. I know you sort of slid in there a little bit late. And so feel free to reflect, or if you want to just sort of absorb that, that'd be great. But I want to share, I don't usually start, but it's really very alive for me, the yes and of what Carl was saying, that it takes both. And what is also really necessary is moving beyond the performative. I was the Facebook likes and that stuff. I was on my morning walk the other day, and I saw a house with a sign, little yard sign that said, "We stand with Ukraine," and I just got pissed. I was like, "Okay, and your sign is doing what? Your sign is doing what? Have you written letters? Have you lobbied? Have you what have you done beyond? But you put a sign in your front yard, and we all feel good about that." So I'm really, really struck by the need for both. The need for the direct action, not the need for the performative, the need for the direct action, and the need for the systemic structural stuff that actually is the result of the direct action.
It's the worst.
What is standing out to y'all from the conversation today? This has been a big one. Yeah, Carl.
I think what I'm taking from what Vu has sort of made us think about is that I think we have to be really clear about what our contribution is and what our contribution is not.
Yep.
And I think if we need to think about whereabouts in the system we have a role, and we need to focus on that, because we can't be everything and we can't do everything.
Andrew, we get to see your face.
Hello, everybody. I've been listening the whole time, and a few things struck me. One, sort of building on what Carl and others have said, I think there's some, I think finding the place where creating the future lives in sort of the stack of change. And of, I don't necessarily want to say activism, but social, social change, because it seems like there are, as Vu was alluding to, there are, people out there in groups that are under real, they're at war right now. And, this might not be the right thing for everybody right now. Right. And so figuring out sort of where this lives, and, as Carl said, like who this is for, what this is doing, and not that, you know, we can't serve, you know, various groups of people, but I think doing that in a way that, you know, Hillary's always said meet them where they are, which then she followed up with that's total bullshit. but you know, that sort of provides the right thing for the right people at the right time. I think that's sort of my big takeaway from this.
Yeah. Ron.
Yeah, I guess my reflection might be a question back to Vu, maybe. I've been thinking about your comments, and I'll question you with three questions and see what comes up for you. I do wonder what you've been involved with Creating the Future for a while, and I did wonder what you felt the strengths to date were of Creating the Future and your involvement in it. What would need to change in how we approach things in order, in your eyes, to see it be more effective? And the last question would be just what do you feel needs to happen for you to stay actively engaged here?
Those are big. You don't need to answer now, honey. Lori, did you have your hand up? Okay. Madeline.
Well, I'm wrestling with an internal midlife crisis right now after all of this and the purpose of my work, but I am internally struggling with the urgency is real and like the urgency is now. And if all I do is punch people in the face, my hand will fall off. And I need to, sorry, that's a very graphic metaphor. But I also need to take time to like rest and recharge. And I use part of these conversations as a recentering to make sure that the way in which I'm taking action is in line with my values and the way I want to be acting. And is that me and my privilege speaking and my comfort of not wanting to push myself outside of a place in which I am comfortable because I have a lot of privilege. And I don't have an answer to that right now.
Yeah. Thank you. Josephine.
It wasn't part of what I was going to say is that I love that you just said that, Madeline, that resonates with, can you guys still hear me? Yeah. Resonates with me well. I mean, that was for sure sits with me. And so lots to be said and you're all sort of saying it collectively, but I just, for me, what's sticking out is I'm so thankful that Vu said everything that he said and including to have me, all of us have me think that how tired people are about being asked to be engaged, right? Like kind of know that and feel that already, but having like actual words to it is in my experience, in my space, in so many realms, that's so very true. And I don't know why, I'll ponder on it for sure, that I wouldn't have been able to speak it with words, that sentiment of people are just tired of, you know, come together because you're Native American or that you're Black or that you're this or that you're upset about Roe versus Wade, let's talk. Like, so asking to be engaged, not just this moment, but for quite some time, I feel like, is people are frustrated and tired. Not that that means, you know, that that's the answer to anything necessarily, but for me that resonates so loudly and is so worth my mental space to think through and question and, you know, just have that conversation with me and my close ones. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm reflecting on the comments that Farah made about are we engaging with others? where can we step into? We've always said that we are a support to movements. We're not a movement. People love to say that creating the future is a movement. No, we're not a movement. That's an organization. Our role is to support movements, and in what way? But what does it take to step into where other people are, the work that they're already doing? Yeah, Elaine.
Well, I can tell you, my head is just swimming. So I needed to go back to the goal. Because for me, the goal is not engaging with community, which I 100% agree with Boo. That's nonsense. We're beyond that. We were talking about engaged citizens, where people feel connected. They feel they're growing and learning, and they feel that they have the power to make change. So maybe the words around that are not the right words. And maybe what we're trying to create is words around people feeling confident that they can make a difference, so that everybody makes a difference. It's that we're trying to get at, that everybody can make a difference. And so when we look at that, what does that mean? But I don't know. But the other thing that comes to mind is, way back before I even had children, I went to listen to this expert on child behavior. And they were talking about toddlers and saying what a challenging time it is for toddlers. And she says, there is a reason you don't give a machine gun to a toddler, because they would shoot. They would kill everybody. Now, she was trying to be facetious, and I know that's a sensitive topic. But literally, if we have people who are feeling toddler-like right now because they are frustrated that they can't get what they need or what they want, or get their parents or others to listen to them, to know what they need or want and satisfy that, we've got a bunch of angry toddlers. How do we shift from redirecting the, not wanted toddler behavior of punching and kicking and biting and stuff like that, to things that they can channel their energy to and feel like they're being satisfied? I know that's a kind of crazy analogy, but that was what was kind of bubbling up for me. But I do want to say, first of all, again, I'm sorry, Linda, that I cut you off. I didn't even know my mic was unmuted when I said that. It was like, no, that's not a good thing. It's like a Facebook thing. I don't do any social media stuff, but I do apologize. And also, just to say thank you, my brain wouldn't be firing the way it is if I wasn't in this Zoom room with so many brilliant thinking, talking, the wisdom that you bring to this big table here is I'm truly grateful. So I thank you for that. So thank you, Hilde.
Thank you. Mark.
I thought I was going to be speechless after all this, but I'm obviously not. What I'm looking at as a result of Vu's comment is a reflection of what's happening to us as an organization. I'm going to speak for one organization, one nonprofit right now. And how do we extend ourselves to the other communities? And the word community engagement creates, by the language itself, creates the division. So that my community is the environmental, your community is the developer, your community is the infrastructure, my community is the white people, your community is the whatever, Asian, the Black. How do we get into the Black community? We're asking this question all the time. I'm wondering, after just listening to Elaine, if we should not be calling this citizen engagement rather than community engagement. Just the language alone, to acknowledge that every person being engaged, if you will, for as tired as we are of engaging people one at a time, I'm wondering if the language itself is killing us. Just that system of thought alone is giving us the problem. One of the other things that I just realized, that one of the ways through that is Damon Santola. He's from Yale, Harvard, Princeton, wherever he's from, talks about community engagement. He talks about, and I've forgotten the name of the book, I'll get it to you guys later, but one of the things is that we have a many-to-many connection, we can have a one-to-many, we could have a one-to-one connection. And what we're finding is that weak ties, and I'm gonna have to study it more to get it across to everybody, but we've got somebody on our board, if you will, in our group, in our team, management team for this small organization, who is more connected with other communities than any of us will ever be. So we're not forcing ourselves to integrate or to inject or to, you know, hey, you know, we've had these discussions and we're not getting anywhere. But I think what's happening is that once we start rounding out the group that we're working with, that they're going to have strong ties with other groups. All right, because we're not, when you have strong ties and strong ties, if I get together with another environmental group, it's this and this, it's the many to many, and we're not getting outside of that. So we're working on the idea of weak ties to another group, weak ties within our group, getting together with another strong tie group. I'll work on it, but I'm glad Vu brought it up because we're struggling with this every day, every day.
Yeah. Thank you. And we are running late, so if you could share your observations briefly at this point, anybody who still has some observations to share, I'm not going to call on you. Just if you've got a reflection to share, please step in. You know, the sense I'm getting about the word community engagement, I'm really, really, really struggling with those words right now. Because people are, they may be tired of community engagement, which I agree. I know in my community, if I hear one more, there's going to be another visioning exercise of what Tucson could be. It's like, yeah, and are you going to do anything about it? But I also know that I'm tired of not being asked when changes are happening. And so where is that balance? When my community is about to build a new road 3 blocks from my house, and what I'm being asked is, do you want 6 lanes or 4 lanes rather than what's going to happen to my neighborhood? You know, where is the balance between I want to be asked when stuff's going to affect me? And yet, yeah, so I'm grateful for that. Jackie and then Sherry, and then I think that's all we're going to have time for today. Madeline, thank you.
Yeah, and so I'll be very quick, although I do have 2 brief thoughts. One of them is simply around kind of the name of creating the future. And to me, that is kind of the thing that ties those 2 paths together that we talked about around kind of direct action and institutional change is the thing that will sustain both of those is having a vision for the future and a pathway to get there. And I think that is kind of the strength of what catalytic thinking and the model brings. My other thought is around the difference between engagement and relationship. So if I'm thinking about my best friend asking me to dinner to talk about something big going on in her life, she's not engaging me. I might know that the conversation is going to be about this big decision. She wants my input, but at no point is that engagement. That is just us being in real relationship with each other.
Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. Sherry.
Yeah, quickly. I guess I've been listening and, you know, I did catch everything from the beginning, but I feel different today. I feel like I'm different. I'm not, first of all, I don't really want to punch anybody right now. And so, you know, I'm not sure what that means. Like, I want to punch something. I want to punch the source of something. I want to punch the meaning of something. So a little bit, I'm thinking about what does that mean? Second, I think along with what everybody said, I think it made me feel today. I think I feel like for the first time, location matters, you know, where you're at and who you're dealing with and what you're dealing with matters, but all of these things are very relevant, and you obviously don't want to be overlook the concept that you could get to a more severe feeling amongst people. But I also would say that I think one of the things that probably makes me feel more comfortable about where I'm at this point in conversations with the community is that it's right now focused around very young people. And I believe they want to be heard. They want to have a voice, or at least the ones we're talking to right now. So maybe, you know, maybe we're talking to the wrong, or maybe not quite exactly who we could be making a difference to in a more long-term way by, and it may require, you know, starting at the beginning where you are having that conversation, but it does all involve getting something done in real time, real community time engagement, real community time change. So I know we can't use the same type of concepts that we have in the past where we gather everybody's input forever and then try to do something. If we can make little change during the conversations that we're having, we then, I think, start to see that folks get on board with sharing more. So yeah. That's it for me.
Thank you. You all have heard me say in various venues that there's so many groups that I wind up speaking with are advocating for voice, whether it's youth voice or community voice or patient voice. And my frustration is that it's not about voice because people are already talking, it's just nobody's listening to them. And there's, you know, maybe it's about community listening. Maybe it's about, I'm not sure what it is, but I'm really stuck on the language piece right now. Vu.
Apologies everyone for keeping us all here, but I did want to answer Ron's questions. I have really appreciated the engagement I've had with Creating the Future. And I think like the thought leadership has been very helpful. The thoughts that Hildy and others have shared have been instrumental in shaping. And I think that that is one of Creating the Future's strengths, of being able to engage more of that out there. Like even like Creating the Future book that crystallizes all of these ideas and have stories of what has worked in the past and so on, I think would be very helpful. I think what needs to change and what needs to keep me and maybe other people engaged in this is that we cannot kind of disassociate Creating the Future and make it sort of like agnostic in its sort of, you know, like approach. I feel like the people who have ironically been probably implementing Creating the Future most effectively without realizing it. And I know this is one of the goals for Creating the Future is when other people are using Creating the Future and catalytic thinking without us knowing it. And those people are conservatives, not just in the United States, but everywhere. They are using catalytic thinking every single day to get Supreme Court justices onto the bench to like overturn Roe versus Wade, et cetera. And we do not have a counter force using catalytic thinking on the opposite side. And I think for me to be engaged, like we have to start moving to that direction where we are providing this counterbalancing force against conservatives who have been weaponizing catalytic thinking very effectively without even realizing that they are doing it.
Yeah. They're using parts of it. They're not asking who all will be affected by this. Clearly they're not asking that. They're not engaging who all will be affected by this. And they're not asking how are those people going to lead the charge. They're just reverse engineering what they want. And they're doing a real good job of it. Yeah. So they're using pieces of it. But they're certainly not using that very, very first and most important question is who's going to be affected by this and what will it take to make sure that they're leading the charge here and their aspirations are the ones that we're counting. So but they have reverse engineered exactly what we have right now. And I know that we're running late. I'm grateful to all of you who have stuck around. This has been a very lively and very brain-bending conversation, and my brain is bent. I'm looking forward to really thinking about this slowly and deeply, and grateful to all of you. We will be getting together again this Thursday at 12 noon Pacific time. And at about 1 in the morning, Carl's time? No, I'm but grateful to all of you, and we'll see you all on Thursday. Thank you.